Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by a thousand miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and we're here, barely. And
we're
of course,
trying,
Tommy's
man.
Sitting over there. What's up, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm good. You don't sound so good.
Yeah, you heard me muttering things under my breath just before we started. I'm having, yet again, technical issues with this stupid PC that we run production off of. I was telling Jamie right before we fired up. Like I turned it on this morning, had it booted up, everything's working fine, tested production, had all the show notes pulled up, ready to go. And 10 minutes before we start, the thing crashed and I haven't got it back up running yet. That was now 20 or 30 minutes ago. So yeah. It's ridiculous and we're gonna power through it.
That's good fun. Have we mentioned that we need a sponsor? Because we need studio space and money and various other things. So
again, stuff that's falling apart.
We need a sponsor. If you would like to sponsor the show, it's gaminguncensored@gmail.com. Other than your lousy computer, how's your week, sir?
It's good, yeah. Other than stupid computer stuff, things are going well. Just busy, lots of work recently. Enjoyed the Super Bowl. We talked about that for just a sec. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little more now. Enjoying the Olympics starting up, like just a fun time of year. It's a good time.
You're an Olympics guy.
I like the Olympics.
Yes, that's your thing. I have not turned it on yet, so.
But, we spent morning watching ski jumping, which is crazy, and then like downhill style snowboarding, I think is what it's called. It's like it's playing a video game, like it's like playing Steep or something like that, where it's just right. Downhill with ramps and they do tricks and it's awesome. Like it's super. Like ski jumping isn't as exciting to watch. The snowboard stuff's really fun to watch because they're doing like 1460s and triple backflips and crazy stuff that you're like, that shouldn't be possible. So and some curling, which I love. We talk about curling every 4 years with the Olympics, so curling's back around, which is great fun. And so yeah, good times with the Olympics.
I love that you love curling, and I think the reason you love it is you know that that's the event you could compete in.
Absolutely. 100%, that's the truth. Like the athletic skill that's necessary for curling, and I'm sure I'm wrong about this, but seems fairly minimal. Like it doesn't seem like those dudes are doing a lot of conditioning work. It's like a big game of marbles on ice, which to me sounds like a blast. Like it just sounds like the most fun and completely within my range of abilities, where nothing else at the Olympics is within my range of abilities. But that one seems doable. And so, I get into it.
Look, I love the fact that those guys are classified as athletes. And like seriously, I know they are, but that's got to be amazing to say that I'm an Olympic athlete. Oh yeah, what do you do? I'm a curler. I mean, that's pretty amazing, so.
Yeah, and I'm sure it takes way more effort than it looks like it does, and I'm sure that they are well-conditioned athletes like a lot of the other people at the Olympics. It sure doesn't seem like it from an outsider's perspective. And I contend that just about everything in this world that takes skill, everybody thinks they would be good at until they try doing it. You know, like playing a musical instrument, like, I still in my head, and I've tried for years to learn how to play piano. I suck at piano. I can play some scales and get around just a little bit. But in my head, I'm still like, I should be able to make my hands do that. You know, like it shouldn't be as difficult as it is to do that thing. I feel like that's like hitting a baseball too, or throwing a really good spiral. And like, if you don't actually try to do it, you think it's easy. And then when you try to do it, you're like, oh wow, this is a lot harder than I thought. And I definitely don't want to put in the time to be good at this. I imagine curling is the same way.
Dude, that's my whole wife.
Right.
I mean, like, that's my whole wife when I get up. Like,
you have a good excuse. I don't have a good excuse. I just suck at things.
Well, I don't know that I really have a good excuse. It just kind of works out, you know? Like, yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm not good at this. Hands don't work. But
by the way, my computer just popped up with a sad face. Your PC ran into a problem and needs to restart. We'll restart it for you.
I love that. I see that on a regular basis. It really.
I love that the blue screen of death is now a sad face. Like, like they were like, the blue screen of a death is really intimidating. Let's make it a sad emoji.
You know, the thing about that is you got to do something to perk the blue screen up. If it's going to happen so often, you got to do something, right? So, apparently, they just chose to do that.
Yeah, it's not the worst idea, you know? Like, at least it's not as deathy, if you want to give them credit for that. I don't, because I'm pissed at them right now, because my stupid computer won't boot up. But at least they made it a sad face. So, good on them. By the way, I think my computer's about to boot up.
That would be good. Yeah. We kind of need that. I mean, yeah. Like, you people have no idea what we've just been through the last 45 minutes.
The struggle for
minutes.
This show is real.
Yeah. And this is how much we like it.
Good times. Good times. So at some point, we may be able to play production and other things like that. But for now, we're just going to persevere and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be good. That being said, should we get into the news before something else blows up?
We can. It feels like we've already been doing this for like 12 hours, and it's 10 minutes into the show. But we do have news to talk about, so let's talk about news, and if we get to be, if we're able to play some production, that kind of stuff, we'll try that later on. So let me ask you a question, actually, because I feel like we start every show recently with Nintendo, and right now I have Nintendo stuff to start the show with. We also have Sony stuff or Google stuff, so where should we start?
You know what? Let's start with something that we rarely start with. Let's start with Google.
I think this may be the most interesting topic. It's a weird topic, and so let's talk about it. I love it so much because the code name is Yeti. And so, as the Yeti with the modem on this show, it makes me very happy that Google's working on a hardware/service that's codenamed Yeti. So, Google's Yeti is apparently, reportedly, possibly, a gaming hardware/streaming service that they have been working on for a couple of years now and are getting close to at least making public. No idea when this would actually hit the market at this point. But the idea of game streaming is still alive and well, and apparently Google is going to be a player in that market.
I say again, folks, bandwidth predictability is an issue. It's not bandwidth, it's predictability. And we've been saying this for 10 years. I still think, even with a gigabit connection, you can't. This is not easy, and it's right. Not going to be for a while. And I love Google. Everything I run on Google, right?
Right.
My email is Google. Calendar is Google. It's all Google. I love Google. I don't know that even Google can pull this off.
Yeah. I think that's fair, and I think the bandwidth question is fair. Even in the context of us trying to do this show today, we had some dropout that is like we've got plenty of bandwidth on both sides of our connections to be running Skype and not have dropout, but yet we still have dropout on Skype, which is enough of an issue. Take that into the gaming world, even more of an issue, obviously. But I'm curious because I haven't really played with it. In the story, it references PlayStation Now as kind of a similar type of service. Of course, PlayStation Now is Sony's streaming service that you can subscribe to / buy games off of. It's honestly been so long since I've even looked at it that I don't remember exactly the mechanics of how it works, and I think they've changed it. But I'm really curious of anybody, so anybody that's listening to the show that has used PlayStation Now, what has the responsiveness of that been like, and specifically, has it gotten better? Like, has the service improved? I'm curious to how they may be able to do things that would be essentially like buffering, you know? Like, can they load stuff
like
up?
Netflix.
That,
like Netflix. Like what right. Netflix does.
So that when you do have a lag in your connection, that it can kind of play through it. But the problem is Netflix is a static stream. Like, there's no changes. It's not interactive. A game feed is obviously an interactive, dynamic stream. And so I don't know how you can compensate just off the top of my head. I'm sure there's a technical answer to this that people are working on and probably have implemented to some extent. But I don't know in my head, like, the simple logic behind it, I can't figure out how exactly that would work. But that seems to be one way that you could potentially get around some of these issues with the stream lagging or – I don't know. There's, like, if your bandwidth lags, does your resolution drop? Like, in a video when you're watching and your bandwidth lags, your resolution drops? Does that happen on the game? I would imagine frame rate would drop. But I don't know. I just haven't done enough streaming gaming to know exactly what's going to go wrong, especially at this point. We played with On Live 5 years ago now or whatever it was, and that thing just disappeared. And so, like, the bones of this thing exist, but I don't know that we've ever really put flesh on them.
And the thing is, I don't know. The reason we don't know is because I don't think anybody's ever really done it successfully. Like,
yeah, but I would agree with you, except for PlayStation has a service that's running all the time. Like, they wouldn't still exist if it didn't work at all, right? Like, it's got to work for somebody.
Right,
they still got the service going.
My question is, how many people are actually using that?
Sure, and I don't imagine a ton, but some, you know, again, like, it still exists. Like, they're still paying to keep it running, and so if nobody was using it, I feel like it would have gone away by now. I'm going to try to find some statistics on that because I'm really curious, because that seems like the only comparable thing on a major scale that's on the market right now. Because, like I said, On Live is gone, and nobody else I know of is doing anything even kind of like this, so... It has to just be PlayStation Now, and so, yeah. I'll see if I can find some PlayStation Now stats. Given, like, let's just for a second, because I think we're going to always be caught up on the bandwidth side of this until bandwidth is no longer an issue, which is not anytime soon. But let's dismiss that concern. I understand that's the major concern, but let's dismiss it just for a second. And talk about the kind of practicalities of this otherwise. So the rumor is, we know no details about this right now, but the rumor is that it's both hardware and this streaming service. And so then it gets into, is this maybe just like a Chromecast or something that's a $50 purchase that's now, you know, Chrome Gaming or whatever they end up calling it, because they're not going to release it calling it Yeti, which is too bad because, again, I love that name.
Yeah!
So let's say it's called Chrome Gaming and you go pick up a $50 USB stick and a controller from Best Buy or whatever, or $100 USB stick and controller, whatever, but very similar to what Chromecast is now, or all the other Amazon Fire Stick or Roku or whatever, all those things that function basically the same, then you're really just depending on data streaming. But what if it's a little bit more fleshed out? What if they put hardware out that's $200 that comes with, you know, the hardware and a couple controllers, but actually does a chunk of the processing in your house instead of on the cloud? And so you can stream a game, but it actually does have a download still. It's not a 40 gig download or a full game download, but it's kind of a hybrid in between. That could work, right? Like, at least on the technical side, it could function. It could be something that is a realistic way to play video games.
It could work, but in my mind, that's what the Xbox... I mean, when I see that hardware, I'm thinking about the Xbox One X. Because I feel like to do this like you're talking about, to have a partial download and some processing power... and have the game partially being streamed, I really feel like you're going to need some beefy hardware, because I don't think you're going to do that on like a Chrome stick.
Sure.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
what? But do you need something that's beefier than a Switch?
See, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't. Theoretically, you can do it on a Chrome stick. Like, that could theoretically work, because that, again, I don't know. Like, maybe PlayStation Now uses onboard processing for some of it to reduce the load. I haven't found great statistics yet. But maybe PlayStation Now does that, because obviously PlayStation 4 is a pretty powerful box, and so you've got that ability in there. And so... yeah, I just don't know. I just, like, the whole thing is kind of boggling to me.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, to me, it's like, the best example that I can think of, and it's a bad example, but we would have never thought 15 years ago that you could order something online, basically anything online, and have it shipped to your house in a day, right? And it would be cheaper than retail. I would have never thought that 15 years ago. And now we have Amazon, right? So until somebody actually does this successfully... and you see it, and you're like, "Oh yeah, there it is." It's really hard to envision it, and I think that's part of the problem.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I think what we've talked about for a long time.
Amazon's a really bad example, I know, but you know where I'm.
No,
you understand
but
where I'm
the
going
point's there, and we've been talking about it for a while. Like, we think this is where we're eventually going to land. You know. Like we're kind of farther ahead in that analogy, in that we know this is the future, we just don't know when we're going to get there. and we're not there yet. That's the obvious thing, is for most people, many people, I don't even want to say most people yet, but a lot of people that would benefit from a service like this, it's still not going to be viable. It's still not to a point where it can work on a mainstream level. And I don't feel like... Okay, so let's bring bandwidth back into it, because ultimately bandwidth is a big question here. We haven't progressed that much, it doesn't seem, in bandwidth. I'm lucky because I moved into a house that was fiber eligible. And so... my bandwidth personally has increased a ton. I've got great internet now. My internet's fantastic. I have a gigabit fiber connection, which is great. But what is your internet compared to what it was 5 or 10 years ago? How much faster is your internet now? It's a little bit faster, but how much faster is your internet than it was 5 or 10 years ago?
Not that much.
And I feel like that's most people, right? Unless you live in a big city, and I live in a big city, and so I have a little bit of competition. I still don't have much competition. I have really two realistic internet service providers. It just so happens that one of them has fiber available, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But I lived at another house in Dallas that I still wouldn't be able to get fiber at if I still live there. That's 20 minutes from where I live now, you know? Like, it's not even living in a big city, but it's living in the right place in a big city that you can get access, that there's lines run and that you can tap into it easily and all that kind of stuff. And so I don't feel like at this point that there's enough of an incentive in the kind of internet infrastructure world to get us to a point where this is going to be viable for most people, again, unless you live in a big city and have access to really, really good internet. Internet speeds are increasing across the country, but they're increasing, it seems, relatively slowly, right? Like, it just isn't, like, ramping up rapidly. It's doing better, but if it continues at this pace. So PlayStation Now says that it needs a 5 meg connection minimum. But there's no way you're going to run PlayStation Now on a 5 meg connection.
Nah,
you're going to need 100 megs.
You've got to quadruple that. At least quadruple that.
Exactly. Let's say even 50 megs. Let's 10 times it. And still I would be questioning that as viable. Like, yeah, it's such a barrier for so many people. Even if the hardware works and even if they have a good games catalog, which is a whole other part of this conversation. Google doesn't exist in this realm yet. And so, like,
but the beauty
of PlayStation Now is that they can tap into the PlayStation catalog. What games does Google have that they can put on their service?
Well, remember the discussion last show that we had about Microsoft? Remember that? And that they have the resources to do some amazing things, and they don't because they're afraid?
Right.
Remember that?
Uh-huh.
I feel that way about Google. The only difference is that Google is not afraid. Right? So I have no fears about Google being able to get into this business and to be able to do it well, because they will take risks. They will take risk.
Sure. I don't disagree with that, but what risks do you take that gets you a game catalog? They could start producing games. And to use, again, I keep coming back to this, like this kind of analogy of game streaming looking like video content streaming, so comparing it to Netflix or Hulu or whatever. Like, Netflix at this point is all in on first-party content, right? Like, Netflix is producing TV shows and movies constantly. They put a Cloverfield movie up after the Super Bowl, when they announced the movie during the Super Bowl, you know, like, and it was kind of a crappy movie, but that's neither here nor there. But, like, they're putting out stuff literally 2 hours after they announced it. Like, it's all about the content creation side for Netflix now. It's not just what outside stuff that they have available. And so, my computer is booted up, by the way, and now it's trying to set up my mouse, which it took 20 minutes to do. I'm ready just to burn the thing. Let's just throw it out. So it's going to probably keep beeping for a little bit. All that being said, like, that's maybe the place that Google can go with this. And to make this a viable streaming service, Google, to do the risk-taking and to have content, I think maybe this is where those two worlds come together, is going to have to create it themselves and create in-house stuff, or go out and acquire some, you know, studios to do that. Go pick off a big studio from one of the other major publishers out there and start doing some Google published game. Like, Apple got that game company to do a game, you know, like that's a pretty big deal, except that's still fairly small scale in the scheme of things, gaming wise. But if they could start doing, like, if this is nuts and seems incredibly unlikely to happen, but let's just have some fun with some hypotheticals for a moment. Let's say that at E3, Google comes out with this big announcement and does it as part of E3, and shows off a cascade of first party games, a handful, but maybe one big surprise in there, some franchise that we all know that we were expecting to come out on the Xbox or the PlayStation 4 or whatever, but now Google has exclusive rights to it. And they say the only way that you're going to be able to play the next Halo, again, just throwing a game out here, that they've weirdly got a contract with whoever. The only way you're going to be able to play the next Halo is on the Google Yeti, which is this new cloud streaming device that we're debuting here at E3. Like, does that change things? Does that now people are more forgiving of the tech, or gets the box in people's houses, or what?
It seems way out there, but like I said, Google got unlimited resources. So I don't think it's that far out. I mean, it's not Halo, but what if it's something else?
Yeah, what's a good game to put in there? Let's figure that out. What is a game that we want that we haven't seen in a while that would make a bunch of waves? That isn't
BioShock,
again, Halo or BioShock, The Last of Us.
BioShock.
I don't think it's mass appeal enough.
You don't think?
It would get gamers excited. But I think they need something that's even a little bit wider appeal than that, you know? I don't know what it is, though. What's a good franchise that hasn't been around in a while? I like where you're at. I think like that's a good caliber game, but man, I don't know. And does Google, and this may help us with thinking through this a little bit, is Google trying to be more kind of in the family friendly Nintendo realm with this, or are they trying to be in the more gamer centric realm like Microsoft or Sony? Like, I don't know where their kind of gaming philosophy would fall, you know?
I think they're Google, and they know they're Google, and they can do whatever they want.
Sure, but they got to do something.
Well, I mean, look. Okay, you and I have been having this debate off air about my book, okay? My book is done. It's basically done. I handed it to Evie this morning to upload it. And I have a couple of comics in there that are questionable for kids and old people.
Right.
And so you and I have had this debate. Do I keep them? Do I get rid of them? What do I do? And I don't think somebody has, like Google, has the issues that I have, in that I'm dealing with people in my personal life that have issues with the content. The content really is not that bad. As far as things go, you know, in today's world, it's not that bad. But in my personal life, I have people that have said that they have issues, right? So
sure.
I think where Google is at is that they basically need to decide where the line is that they will stop. Like, are they okay with the Rockstar game? With the hot coffee mod, are they going to let that, you know, are they going to kill that? As another bad example, I think they have to figure out where their line is on how far they want to go, not what type of content they can have. They can have everything, but do you want to be like... We always wanted Microsoft to be the super edgy gaming company. And they were when they first started. Now they're not, because they got scared. So if Google wants to be that, I feel like they can be that. They just have to figure out where the line is.
Sure. Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Right. It's just, do they go that way or do they go a different way? But in all of that, you brought up Grand Theft Auto. And so let's use Grand Theft Auto as the example, because I think that's an interesting one. Because it's kind of in the same vein of BioShock, in that it's a very kind of gamer's game, and it's gritty and all that. But it's also got the mass appeal. Like, everybody knows Grand Theft Auto. That's a fairly ubiquitous game. So what if, crazy but not impossible, Rockstar comes out and announces that the next Grand Theft Auto game is being put out in an exclusive partnership with Google on the launch of their new Yeti console that's going to be this streaming device or whatever? Does that make it successful, even with the technical barriers that the thing is likely to have at launch?
Not with one game. And the other
I mean, if you've got to have one game, what's a bigger game than Grand Theft Auto to have for that one game? Well, all I'm saying is they need something big. That would be something big. And, of course, we'd say a catalog of stuff outside of that as well.
Look, Grand Theft Auto is a great example because they have Grand Theft Auto 5 has Grand Theft Auto Online, which we don't get. We don't understand. But it's a huge deal. And I think Rockstar took a risk as far as that was concerned. And I think it has paid off for them. So a company like Rockstar would be that company that would be willing to step out there. As far as, does it sell it? Yeah, I think it sells it. Because it's Grand Theft Auto.
Right. And I mean, that's what they need at the end of the day, right?
But there are only like five games on my hand that I feel like have that cachet.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And this is why this is all.
They would have to have them all, is what I feel like.
Interesting. But that's why it's hypothetical, because they're not. Almost certainly going to get Grand Theft Auto as an exclusive or whatever. Grand Theft Auto, like, Rockstar's risky and whatever, but that also seems fairly dumb if you have an install base of PlayStation 4 and Xbox One users at this point that would like that game. Right. This is all crazy, hypothetical, out there ridiculousness that we're talking about, but it seems like it would take something crazy, out there ridiculous in order for this thing to actually make sense, you know. Like, again, just the idea of Google getting into an already crowded gaming field, and Amazon's tried it a little bit, and a bunch of people have tried it on the mobile side of things, and it just never catches, it never takes off. What if, like, Amazon has like games that you can go buy on like your Fire TV or whatever, and there's a controller that they sell for it? But I don't know of a single human being in the world that uses the thing, you know. Like, it's just, there's just not space in the gaming economy for it. And so in order for Google to pull it off, they've got to show that they've got the tech perfect, that even on a not ideal internet connection, that the thing can work. And they have to have software. And I don't know which one of those things is honestly more difficult. Like, they're both seemingly impossible tasks, right, to get that high-level software that's going to make it make sense. Again, unless they're doing a lot of in-house stuff that's really great. And so now, instead of saying they have Grand Theft Auto, let's say that they're making a brand new game or a game based off of some existing beloved world, like a Game of Thrones title that actually looks legit, that, you know, looks like a big deal, capitalizing on a market that already exists, but it isn't really tapped into in the gaming world at this point. That may be a way too. It's still crazy out there.
And I feel like that this is where VR was 5 years ago. Like, people said, we're going to make VR happen. It's going to happen. And you and I talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and had some of these same doubts. And now it's here, right?
Right.
And I don't think it's going to be a massive success at the start. Like VR has been a bigger success than I think we even thought. We wanted it to be big, but, like, I didn't have a lot of faith.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
And so I think this service is going to be a very similar type deal. Like, I think it's going to be successful at some point and maybe some point soon. But it's going to be slow, just like VR is.
Yes. I'm sorry, my wheels are turning of, like, I think that's true. I wanted to argue that VR has a different barrier of entry, but then, like, as I'm thinking through it, as the gears are grinding in my head, I'm like, maybe it doesn't, because, well, early on, the VR problem was people didn't have a high enough spec rig to run it. But now there's a lot more practical ways to do it. I don't know how you make a game streaming service more practical, the same way that, like, there's tiers of VR in that you have, you know, the Vive Oculus tier, and now we have kind of the mixed reality slash, I would put, like, PlayStation VR on that kind of next level down, and then you have the Google Daydream slash Samsung Gear tier, and like, there's three realistic kind of areas you can get into VR on that, and it feels like that works for a broader clientele, you know, broader user segment. I don't know how you delineate a game streaming service that way, unless it's, hey, if you've got a really good internet connection, you can play something the quality of BioShock or Grand Theft Auto or whatever it is. But if your internet quality isn't great, then you're kind of limited to this lower tier of games that are potentially still good games, just don't have near the streaming requirement or need the time fidelity. Because, of course, another question here is, if you're playing like multiplayer, what kind of latency are you dealing with something that's streaming from the cloud? And so maybe it's, you can play, you know, like a strategy game pretty easily that doesn't require a lot of real-time stuff, then not a real-time strategy game, but you can play like Civilization. Like, Civilization's a pretty leisurely game. You don't have to have quick reflexes. Nothing is super time-dependent on that. And so if you have a latency problem, that's not a big deal. You could still pull that off, but it's limiting on what you can play. And I just don't feel like that feels the same as like the different tiers of VR feels. Yeah, I just can't make sense of it in my head of a good way for it to work.
Well, and the thing is that, again, we're not the guys that have to figure this out. There are guys making a whole lot more money than we are that have to figure this out, and they will. Like, because I really do, I feel like VR is a very similar entry, and it had a lot of some of these same questions. And I think the wireless adapter is a great example. It came out, and one of the biggest hassles in VR is the cables. And so somebody immediately said, we need a wireless adapter. Well, we're about to get a wireless adapter. It's going to change everything. This thing, I think the streaming thing is going to be a similar type deal in that it's incremental.
But how do you fix the fact that your internet's not good?
Well, I think the same way that Netflix fixes the fact that my internet is not good. And I think it's hilarious. We talk about Amazon trying to do this and doing some different things. You know what's funny about all of this? People don't realize that both Netflix and like 80% of the internet runs on Amazon Web Services, right? So whatever Google does, they're going to need Amazon Web Services. So I would not be surprised if somebody comes out there, and I should have said this 5 years ago with on live, but I would not be surprised if somebody comes out like Google and has a product that does okay and then somebody else like Amazon or somebody like that takes the Sony approach and says, okay, you're already running on our web services. Let's make it better. And so, again, I should have said that with on live years ago. But I don't really feel like that OnLive was the first, but it wasn't really, it was way too early.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely way too early. It was ahead of its time, but like it's still too early, you know, like the world hasn't caught up to what they were trying to do still. And so I think we're going to be caught up on the same thing on this topic just over and over. I'm interested to see what they try to do. I would guess, if I had to put money on it, that this goes the way of Amazon's gaming service at this point or whatever. Like, I don't doubt Google's resources. I just don't think there's a place in the market for this right now. Like, I think PlayStation Now would be a bigger deal if there were a place in the market for this right now. Now, granted, the difference with PlayStation Now is you have to have a already gaming console to utilize it. Maybe the selling point of the Yeti is that you can get into, you know, mainstream games at $50 instead of at $300. But even then, I just don't see the market for it. Like, I don't know who's demanding this at this point. Maybe that makes me sound ridiculous, as if I was saying I don't understand Netflix streaming when people are still watching DVDs. But I really feel like this is a different world. Like, I don't feel like it's totally analogous.
Well, and I think you're right. It's not analogous, but I really feel like that at some point somebody's gonna find the key, whatever that is. There's this one missing piece, and somebody's gonna find it. Yeah. And I mean, we've been talking about for 5 years that this was the last console generation,
right?
And based on the argument that you just made, it can't be, right? So if Google or somebody else wants to make this happen, and you know Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo do because they want to make cheaper hardware and still have good software, we've been talking about this being the last console generation for 5 years. So if this needs to happen, and you're saying it's not going to happen, does that mean we're going to have another round of Xbox, Sony, Nintendo?
Well, let's talk about that, because I think that's actually a really interesting question, and it made some things start running in my brain. I don't know what the odds are that we see like PlayStation 5 or Xbox 2 or whatever they call the next thing at E3 this year, but it would be getting about that time within the next couple of years in kind of traditional gaming timelines that we're about ready to start at least seeing those teases of new hardware. But the industry's in an interesting place in that you're exactly right. We've been talking about, like, is this the last console cycle for a while? And I think that we could be in a place where the answer to that is yes, that this we are in the last quote-unquote hardware cycle or console cycle. And at the same time, we will see new hardware coming. And so let me make another analogy that's going to just be miserable and fall apart, I'm sure. But this is what's going through my head right now. I'm thinking about what software is doing at this point. If you use any professional software, there's this new trend, and I've seen this with Adobe now that they're doing this with Creative Cloud stuff, and also in our world, Pro Tools just announced, music production software just announced that they're going to start doing the same model as well, which is this kind of yearly incremental model as opposed to new version model. And so Pro Tools, the version of Pro Tools that I'm still running, that is now the one dated version of Pro Tools, is Pro Tools 12. But they just announced that now it's Pro Tools 2018. And like all the Creative Cloud stuff, like it's no longer Photoshop, whatever. It's like Photoshop 2018, or all the software is now kind of this gradual update cycle as opposed to these big pushed numbered updates. And so what if we get to a place that instead of every 5 or 6 years, Microsoft and Xbox putting out a new like PlayStation 5, what if they're just putting out every 1 or 2 years, these little, like the PlayStation Pro or the Xbox One X things, but are starting to do it on a regular basis. And so that we get this hardware upgrade, and eventually maybe your games are backwards compatible all the way through. And that's a big question. If they kind of follow this model, do they keep stuff backwards compatible, or do you get to a place where games don't work anymore? But there's obviously the diminishing of quality as you go backwards in the catalog, that as the Xbox One X pushes the tech specs forwards, that games get kind of incrementally better as well. And so instead of these big jumps in technology, that we just kind of have this gradual thing. And so every other year at E3, we're getting the next update for the PlayStation. Is the PlayStation whatever, you know, that's going to be a little bit better, a little bit stronger. It's going to cost $50 more than what the other unit on the market is. And having this kind of continuous update process as opposed to every cycle kind of update. That may be nuts, but seriously, what like big tech updates have happened in either PlayStation or Microsoft consoles other than graphic enhancements and slight other things? I am playing my PlayStation 4 essentially the same way that I played my PlayStation 2. You know, like it's a DualShock controller that has two analog sticks and four shoulder buttons and on and on. It's basically playing the game the same way, and I still love it and want to play games that way. Nintendo's out of this equation because they've done crazy stuff with their consoles over that same time period. But Microsoft and Sony are basically playing games the same way, that the consoles have really only given us better graphics and better processing capabilities to add more textures or more characters on screen or that kind of stuff, or online capabilities and that kind of stuff. But you can kind of roll that stuff out incrementally as well. That there's no reason that we have to have this major console cycle continue.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, this is like mind bending. Like, because I'm listening to
this
you
show
talk.
Went to places I don't think either one of us thought it was going to.
No, not at all. I thought that was going to be easy, and it's not so yep. much. But I feel like that everything you say is correct. And I think it's really dependent on way back at the beginning of the conversation. I think it's really dependent on the people that are playing this stuff. Because let's be honest, yeah, the PlayStation 4 is essentially the same machine that your PlayStation 2 was. Just better hardware. We're playing games the same way. We're doing that kind of stuff. And the Xbox the same way. They're just doing lousy software. And we don't really feel like we need it. Right?
Sure. Well, and they're doing things you can get on the PC. The good software is available elsewhere.
Right. So my point is that they really have no reason to change until somebody... Until we, the gamers, say, okay, I'm not real happy with this, and I'm not going to buy it. I don't know about you, but I'm completely happy with my PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
I love my PlayStation 4. And yes. To be totally honest, I don't really want Sony to change it because it's a rocking piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Yes, I wish it was a better media box. Yes, it needs some other perks. But for the most part, I am completely happy with my PS4.
And those things that you want can be done incrementally in small rolled out updates. They're not big radical changes to how you play the system. Whereas Nintendo is the opposite of that,
right?
Going from GameCube to Wii U to Switch, like playing the Switch is not like playing the GameCube. The controller's a lot different. I mean, it's not radically different, but it's a lot different. The whole tablet thing is obviously a lot different. The motion control aspect of it that the Wii introduces is a lot different, but the Switch isn't like the Wii because you can take it with you. The Wii isn't like, or the Switch isn't like the Wii U because it doesn't suck. You know, like it's the changes that Nintendo has made have been big. And so from Nintendo, I expect new hardware that changes things and is going to give me a new gameplay experience. But I'm with you 100%. I love that PlayStation 4 in there, and I love the PlayStation 3, and I love the Xbox 360 more, but just to stay in Sony line. And I love the PlayStation 2, and I even enjoyed the PlayStation, the original box, a lot. It was a little more different because it was a little bit more limited on the controller side. But from the PlayStation 2 on, like, the consoles have been great. They've put out good games for them, and other than screwing up a price point pretty drastically on the PlayStation 3 and botching the rollout of the console and putting it behind from the beginning, which I think is one of the reasons it never had the software catalog like the Xbox 360 did, aside from them kind of screwing up the console launch and everything of that, the hardware was still good. It was still a good gaming box, and it was fun to play games on. And I just want to play games like that, you know? And if I can continue to get life out of my PlayStation 4 for a little bit while longer, or upgrade it for not a drastic, you know, hit, and I'm perfectly fine with that. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing the PlayStation Pro Plus or whatever, you know? Like, the names are going to have to get better. But if they want to, like, start teasing that at E3 at this point, and this is opposite of what I would have said probably 2 years ago, you know? But I think that's a logical way for console hardware to go forward. And for the time being, that, like, give me a PlayStation 4 that doesn't have a disc drive. And that's getting crazy, but that's where I think, instead of going to streaming, just going to digital distribution and downloadable titles, like, I think that's a logical step. And if you can give me a PlayStation 4, if I had two options of a PlayStation 4 Pro and a PlayStation 4 Pro sans disc drive that was $50 or $100 cheaper, absolutely. I'll download all my games, you know, like, whatever.
We're already doing it.
And even if you get a game on a disc, it still takes 30 or 40 gigs of space on your console to install extra stuff, you know? Like, the disc is going away anyway. And so that seems like a logical progression is, okay, now we're going to have a PlayStation that doesn't have a disc drive on it because that's not technology that's needed anymore. But you're still running your games locally off of the hardware, you know? And maybe we start doing some processing on the cloud, which Sony has talked about in the past. And so maybe we start seeing that of there's a little bit of shared processing, and if your internet's down or whatever, like, you can still play a game. It's just not going to look as pretty because you're not getting the little extra cloud power behind it or whatever. And eventually in 10 years or 15 years, when everybody's got gigabit or better bandwidth, then we have a console that's just streaming. But it feels like it still is going to take a long time to get there, but not necessarily with console cycles in between, to try to tie all this stuff together on this long, meandering, really random conversation.
Yeah, that didn't go the way I expected at all. I was feeling real good about getting right in. And then we did that.
So, we don't know what that was.
We good have times. No idea, but I will tell you this. All of this being said, now that we've covered every spectrum of gaming in the last 40 minutes, I'm really happy about where gaming is right now.
Yes. I will agree with you 100% on that. We are in a good era of gaming.
And I think it's only going to get better. Because
yeah, I do too.
Not to get back on this topic, but you know what's changed for you and me? In the last year that did not exist a year and a half ago?
Huh.
YouTube has changed our lives. Because you are able to stream to YouTube, and I can see what you're playing, and we're going to talk more about Horizon later in the show, because it's really really good. Fantastic. And we may have to eat some of what we said last week. But like, YouTube has changed everything, right? And I would have not really ever thought that we would have the, like, when we were trying to make PlayStation SharePlay work, and there wasn't enough bandwidth, I never thought for a second, hey, let's just go to YouTube and stream it live.
Sure.
I mean, like, that's one of those things that has fundamentally changed the way that we play games. Just to put a bow on what you're talking about things slowly changing, YouTube and Twitch and some of those other services have done that. And it's totally snuck up on us.
Yeah. 100%. And stuff's going to continue to progress, which is exciting. It's a good time to be a gamer. You're 100% right about that. And it's only going to get better, seemingly, unless there's something we don't foresee coming. The gaming industry is strong and is going to continue being awesome. So we can help. So all that being said, we do have a segment this week because the computer is running. Cross your fingers that it will for at least the next 15 minutes or so. From our boy Brigham about the Steam Link. He's actually recording the segment while playing Grand Theft Auto. And so there's some great tie-ins here, both to what we've already talked about. Steam Link is interesting technology to put into this kind of, it's in-home streaming, but it's still kind of streaming content and services and whatever. And Grand Theft Auto is going to come back up in the show in a little bit because we've got some news on it as well. And so it's a wonderful segue segment, which I'm sure that's exactly what Brigham thought when he was putting the thing together. So we're going to drop it in this mess of a show so far, and it was going to fit in perfectly. So it's super entertaining listening to Brigham play a game and try to talk about the Steam Link. And so we'll let him take it from here.
What's up, Jamie and Tommy? Playing some GTA 5 while recording this. And it's kind of like also an ADD review of the Steam Link while playing games and can't really focus. I guess you guys really like that for some reason. I got the Steam Link and the Steam Controller bundle. I've already ditched the Steam Controller and I'm ready to gonna take a hammer to it. I'm pretty happy about that. The Steam Link, it is, I want to say flawless. But yeah, it's flawless. Yeah, because I didn't experience any issues. Setup takes less than 5 minutes. Hook it up. It comes with all the cables you need: Ethernet cable, HDMI power. The product has a nice, good weight to it. It feels very, very solid. It is well made and simple as hell. And like, you don't need to read instructions. And if you, I haven't just looked at it, take a look at it. I'm like, no, let's take a look. Make sure they don't, just to ensure they don't have a single step. It's just plug your shit in and self-explanatory. It doesn't, and literally they could have said, they could have just put that in big text, plug shit in. And that's all. They didn't even put the pictures. All they did was just put the pictures. Whoa, crap. Oh my God, I just love this driving this off-road crap with the GTA 5. It's such a good, it's like you're just flying in the middle of this. In the air, oh my God. Anyways, just a big picture of things plugging in. They just could have put it, plug shit in. You're a dumbass if you can't figure it out. And then if they have like, if you need help, call this one. You're dumb. 1-800, you're dumb. That would be so cool if they did that. But anyways, so it's that simple. You literally plug it in. It starts working. It says, go type on your computer this one-time code to share the link. And it automatically discovers your computer. So if you, let's say if you have 3 gaming computers because you're that kind of a baller on your network and they're all turned on, you can literally choose what PC. Oh, dude, don't you fucking kick. I want to kick your ass. Okay, you want to shoot me? I want to shoot you. Oh, he just punched the shit out of me. Wow. I got I was not stealing that guy's truck again. Anyways, what was I saying? Yeah, you type in a one-time code on your PC, and that's it. Now, as for the Steam controller, the reason why I hate it so much is it feels like cheap, utter garbage. Like, I haven't felt a controller that felt so cheap since all the Nintendo controllers except for the game. I love the Game controller, and I actually love the GameCube controller and the N64 controller. They're some of my all-time favorites of the classics. Anything new from Nintendo, I hate. In this sense, their controller is cheap plastic. This one feels worse. It may be 25 cents in quality. That's about it. The batteries cost more than probably the entire product. I don't care about their stupid sensors. They do not work as any form of joystick. That little touchpad cannot emulate a joystick. It tries to emulate a mouse, and when you move your finger off it, it goes like in weird directions. So if anyone who has a Steam controller, go ahead and just try playing Doom right away. Just try playing. It is garbage. You can't do it. It's not possible. It's like using it. Wow. A laptop and using only the touchpad to control your entire character. It is that useless. And Steam, if anyone likes a Steam controller, they're a flat out moron and just get punched in the face. I am so upset with that, and that was the biggest waste of money ever. Whew. Yeah, it just really pisses me off on how horribly made that was. The $5, even if I have only paid $5 for it, I would still be this pissed off. The Steam Link is worth that $5. Now, you could easily make the Raspberry Pi and turn it to Steam, because it's just an app. That's all it really is. It's just an app, and you can get the app some form. I think it's just download Steam in big picture mode, and there's an option to create it as a Steam Link. Screen share. Essentially, that's what it does. It's a screen share of the network, and of course, you have to have a hardwired connection. If you don't do hardwire, it's just not going to work. It's that simple. Oh, okay. Get out of my way, people. Jeez. It's going to run over some people or something. I need to hurt some people. There we go. Oh, here's one. Right into the wall. That's great. what was I saying? So it got to be hardwired. So, like, my current network setup is from my gaming computer. It's a 100-foot Cat 6 cable. That goes across the house to the router. It's all mounted to the walls and stuff. And then I have a switch in the living room, which is where I hook the Steam Link into, because I also have the Blu-ray player, the PS3, the Xbox 360, the original launch Xbox. My friends just gave it to me. All of them are hardwired over in the TV entertainment system. And a Roku also. I got that over there as well. And so that's all hardwired. And so that's where that's hooked up, and it's just all networked. Anyways, it's sitting behind a Blu-ray player, so it's hidden. And if you have a black deal, it's so low profile, I can't even see it. Like, it's kind of behind my Blu-ray player, but I can still see the dongle if I put the Steam Link, not the dongle. The Steam Link, I can still see it if I look really carefully, but it's a very thin piece of product. It's not. What the hell happened to this car? What the hell? It's like, I don't know if you can see it. It's like stuck on just the curb. What the hell? Maybe the lamp was underneath it, I don't know. I gotta steal this car before the cops come and kill me. It's just anyone who ever is tempted to get the Steam Link, do it. Because I've always loved PC gaming as my home. I love all platforms, period. I don't care which platform it is, I still love it all. I'm just a fan of games, not platform, primary PC though. But when you play PC, I find it really hard to actually relax while playing PC. Now, you can kick back and use a controller on PC, and that's fine, but you're still in front of the computer, and it just doesn't have that same kind of kickback experience, is what I've always liked about gaming, is to kick the footrest up, have the nice cold beer. Like right now, I got my dog in my lap. He's sitting there just watching, if not sleeping, one of those two. I don't know. But that's the part of gaming I love. And that's where consoles come in for me. That's my relaxation part. Playing games on PC, I can relax, and it's a lot of fun. But it's always so much more tense just because of using the mouse and keyboard. And so I've always wanted to just play PC games on my TV in the living room. Not the TV in my room, not the TV in my spare room, not the TV in the basement, where it's pretty much a pool table, big stereo system, and... Yeah, I think that's all I really got in there. I really don't go down that much. I go and play pool, shoot some pool every once in a while, either by myself or with some friends, whatever. But I just don't even have a TV down there, so it'd be kind of, well, I have a TV, but it's just literally just plays Pandora. That's all that TV is for, is just Pandora, which is super stupid. But I just don't want anything down there. And but just kicking back and having the Steam Link over there on the living room and just playing on there, it works great. It's just amazing. As I mentioned, I'm playing GTA 5. I'm still getting 60 frames per second through the Steam Link. The latency is slim to none. I can't see a difference. I'm actually connected with the PS4 controller to the Steam Link, which it has the most flawless pairing ever. Literally, once you stop the streaming on the Steam Link, you just set the pairing mode on the PS4, it activates the Steam Link, it automatically discovers the Steam Link. The Steam Link automatically discovers the controller and pairs it, and that's it. You don't have to go to your computer and type in a code, you don't have to acknowledge, you don't have to use the mouse and keyboard to select nothing. It just connects once you have the pairing mode on the PS4 controller, and you're not streaming on it. And it just works so good. So, I'm just beyond impressed with the Steam Link. What the hell? Okay, I gotta go back there. There's some. What? Are you beating this white? Are you some? I want to shoot this guy. Hold on. Oh, come here. Yeah, get off of her. Oh, wow! I keep getting fucked up. Wow. Mike, you're a pussy. That's it. I just suck. I didn't have a gun out, so I started trying to punch when they have guns. Steam Link, get it. It's only $5 during all these big recent sales. If they still have them on during the spring, I want to buy 3 of them and then get a few more PS4 controllers. It does have Xbox One S controller support. I love the Xbox One S controller a little bit more than the PS4 controller, but since I've already experienced how well this just pairs up, I'm sure the Xbox One S controller pairs up with it just as easily. Whoa! This Lamborghini's flying! Oh my god, that was so fast. Holy crap. Anyways, it's just like instant launch mode. Just like blah, 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 super fast. So if I want to get more of them, I want to hook up to one to pretty much each BRTV that I have a couch in each particular room or a sofa, whatever I have in each room that I got the TV in. And I'm just going to have it there. That way I just have them. And it's amazing. For anyone who's thinking about getting a Steam Link, get it. Get it, play it, use it. You will not be dissatisfied. And if you are, well, then you have a serious freaking problem. Which I don't think I've mentioned it yet, but the big picture mode, I absolutely love the user interface. It is so good. It's very smooth. I love the sound effects. Ooh, I got to pause this, and so I have a coherent question for you, Tommy. Since you're an audio guy, I love audio sound effects in games. I love just hearing like the minute details of when a boot hits the ground, you can hear the rocks crumble underneath it, or the slight shift of weight, you can hear that, the shifting weight underneath the shoes, or whenever the characters run, you can hear the clothing go against each other. So Tommy, since you're such a huge audio guy, do you pay really close attention to those? Because I know when I was in graphics design school, I started really focusing when I was doing game texture for 3D graphics, stereoscopic graphics. I was really looking for details, and I could find simple mistakes just by playing games, and I was like nitpicking. So how does your audio expertise, well, I think you mentioned it's just probably broadcasting, but there's a lot of little things I'm sure you get focused on in sound effects. How does that correlate with your focus in video games? Are you able to keep your mindset off of that, or do you actually focus on it, hear the little details, or notice that whenever a character is inside of a cave, you can hear the echo? Or even if you're in voice chat, there's a game, I can't remember what it is, kind of like PUBG, but it's different. But you, if you're doing voice chat, your lips are moving like an Arma. In game, like, but if you're actually voice chatting, it communicates to near people. Like, if you're close enough, you can hear each other. If you're far enough, you can't hear them. But if they're both inside like a cave or an echoey place, it actually has reverb or echo. It is amazing. So, how much does your expertise in audio reflect your opinion on games? Do you really focus on the details or not? So, I had to get that coherent question I've been thinking about for a while. I was never remembered to ask. Let me know what you think on that, Tommy. In the end, guys, get the Steam Link. It's the greatest of all time. Deuces.
Hello. It is me. You should check out BammingUncensored.com. When you go there, we will have cake for you, and a party, a big party, where all your friends will be, including your best friend, the Companion Cube.
Done.
Gotta be Red Dead. You noticed it took me a while. You probably thought I was asleep. But it's gotta be Red Dead.
Yep. From the new one, we've got Red Dead news in the show as well. So that's exciting.
I have to say,
a super cool tone to it already.
I love it. That's good sound. I have to say, that segment was perfect for this train wreck of a show. That segment was fantastic, dude.
In all the best ways.
Yes. Send us another one just like that because it was perfect for this messed up show.
And my favorite part is like right there in the middle where like, I don't know what happened, but like he just stops and it's just like you hear like the death music in the background. And he's like, what the... It was great. It was great content interposed with a train wreck of trying to play a game and talk about games, and it was awesome. I loved every second of it.
That's fantastic. And I want to answer his question because...
I want to answer his question.
Yeah, you, but I want to answer it too because...
You are,
I gotta tell
but I'm going to answer it first, so I'm going to interrupt you to answer it first. But it is a good question. So I'm actually teaching a class this semester where the last month or so of the class is going to be about sound design for video games. I've taught this class a handful of times in the past. It obviously is something I love. It's fun. And so hearing you talk about the footsteps and stuff, Brigham, like the crazy amount of like audio assets it takes to make a AAA title, because with like footsteps, you've got to have different footsteps for every single type of material in the game. And so like what you were saying, of like you're walking on rocks versus you're walking on wood versus you're walking in water versus on carpet in a house or whatever, every single one of those sound different. And not only do you have to have assets for every single different type of material that your character may be walking on in the game, you also have to have a bunch of them, because if they're walking, if they're running, and even if it's just the walking footsteps, you still got to use a lot of them to just make it random enough that it sounds natural, because how people walk is we don't step the same, we shift our weight around a little bit and all that kind of stuff. And so between using a ton of assets and then some in-game processing to pitch shift them up or down just a little bit to make them a little bit longer, shorter, all these things that we can kind of randomize them with to give them that kind of depth of interest is so critical. So yes, I do definitely listen for that stuff. And I joke with my students that I always tell them from like the very first day of class, it's like, I'm going to ruin music for you. Like, you're not going to be able to listen to music the same way anymore. You're going to hear things that you never heard before and songs that you used to love. You're not going to like as much anymore because you get caught up on some of these technical issues that otherwise you probably wouldn't have been nearly as attuned to because you didn't care about that side of it nearly as much. And so sure enough, a semester or two into the program, they're like, you ruined music for me, I listen to everything so different now, or whatever. And it's tongue-in-cheek because obviously I still very much enjoy listening to music, and they do too. But at the beginning of this class I'm teaching right now, it's about post-production, so I say the same thing, but I'm gonna ruin watching movies and playing video games for you because you're going to get fixated on the sound aspect of those. And so an example I'll use of one of my favorite games of all time recently, Breath of the Wild, where I was disappointed in some of the sound design aspects of it, that I thought it was too simple, that they could have been a lot more detailed and some of the really basic Foley type sounds, some of the stuff that's just simple, but it sounded repetitive after a while. I love the music in that game. Obviously, that's another thing on the audio side I'm listening to really closely. And for the most part, like the effects and that work. But like just some of the really simple stuff in that game, I thought just was a little dry, just didn't quite have the interest that the rest of the game did. And one last thing, and then I'll cede it to you. I also oftentimes play games without much sound or any sound when I'm multitasking and doing lots of other stuff. And so in the same breath of me saying, yes, I pay a lot of attention to sound, I'm also going to say and admit this as somebody who does audio professionally, that I don't always listen to the sound on a game. I play lots of games
where I'll listen to it
with the sound on sometimes, and then without the sound on sometimes because I'm also watching TV or talking to my wife or whatever, and I'm not going to be wearing headphones or whatever, totally immersed in that situation either. And so I both love video game audio and sometimes don't pay a ton of attention to video game audio, oftentimes in the same game that I'll play a game like Horizon. I've played a lot of Horizon with the sound on. I've played a lot of Horizon with the sound off. It just depends on what I'm doing while I'm playing that game. Horizon is much better at the details than like Zelda was. The audio and Horizon, a lot of voice acting and stuff's really, really solid. But I'll just do subtitles as well. Oftentimes, I always, even if I have the sound on, I always play with subtitles because I get distracted too easy. And so if I'm reading, even along with the audio, it helps me focus. So that's my answer. Sorry for monopolizing that for a second. I'll let you fill in now.
You're like, my question, bitch! That's what you were doing there. What I was going to bring up was what you just said, is that I've seen you play a lot of games with the sound off. And because of your job and because of what you do, that has changed a lot. Because I saw you play a lot of games for a long time with no sound. Because let's be honest about sound in video games, most of it's not very good. Some of it's really great, but a lot of it's not very good. And
that's fair.
Right? Do you agree?
I do. Yeah. There's audio is something that gets overlooked in any visual media, movies, video games, anything. Yes.
And so a lot of the time, there's not in a lot of games. Other than if you're trying to get the story, there's not really a point in having the audio up. Like if you're playing Horizon or The Witcher or something like that, you definitely want the audio up. But 90% of games, it doesn't really matter most of the time. Because once you've listened to it for about 10 minutes, you've heard all you're going to hear, right?
Yeah. Let me jump in on that point, because I think that's a good point. There's a lot of repetition in video game sound. And so some games depend a lot more on like gameplay of having sound on. So like one of the things about PUBG is that the sound is so helpful. Hearing a car coming, you can hear it before you see it, or hearing shots in the distance or whatever, and even being able to kind of localize them, hearing they came from your left or your right, or get a sense of how far away they are, something like that. That's an example of where the sound is pretty critical. Like it plays really directly into the gameplay. And that's true in a lot of games and is really valuable. And then there's a lot of games where the sound is there as a texture that's cool, but not necessary, that you don't have to have it to really understand or to navigate what's going on in the game world. I will always start a game with the sound on, especially like Horizon. We'll just keep coming back to that. But I want to know what the characters sound like, you know, so that when I don't have the sound on, like I still hear their voice, you know.
You got
like
that in when your I'm, head, yeah.
Exactly. When I'm watching TV, you know, I'll turn the sound off, but I can still hear Aloy's voice. You know, like I know what she sounds like. And so if I'm even just reading subtitles, I still have that in my head.
By the way, since you brought her up, and I can't say this about anybody else in the game, really, but her audio is great.
It is.
Her audio is fantastic.
That voice actor is great. She was in the
Life is Strange.
Yes, Life is Strange. Thank you. As well, and she's really, really good. Really good. And so, yeah. And that game's just well done. Like, the sound's good, the music's good, everything about that game's good. It's one that I'll probably be using as an example in this class when I get to it in a month or so.
Can I sit in on that? That'd be awesome.
It's really entertaining.
Can we do some Skype video? Because that'd be fun.
It's a good time, and we get into like middleware of using like FMod, and so I have a little bit of experience of working with FMod, which if you're in the video game world at all, there's software that audio people use as kind of a go-between, so that, like, for instance, FMod will interact directly with Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine both isn't as deep on the audio side of things as like FMod is, that's specifically designed for that, and it takes a lot more coding knowledge, whereas FMod has a really good UI that if you understand the basics of a DAW, you can get around fairly easily. And so I could create some really kind of cool, interesting stuff in FMod and without a ton of coding work be able to drop that into a game build in Unreal Engine or something like that, which is super cool. And so, yeah, it gets technical as well as kind of the cool creative side of talking about sound design and how you make explosions sound like explosions and not like silly little booms, which a true explosion is just not a very interesting sound, but a game explosion is usually a lot more fun sound. And so there's a lot of all that side to it for sure.
And can I say before we wrap this up, now that I know you're teaching that, I'm curious to your thoughts on 5.1, because I've been a 5.1 snob for a long time.
Sure.
The 5.1 system that I've been using, I've been using for 15 years or close to it. I have the Z5500 from Logitech that they don't make anymore. You can't buy them. And the systems that are out there don't really compare for gaming. At least that's what I read, right? And
sure.
And back in the day, you had the slightly cheaper version of that system, which was really good, just smaller.
Right.
And I am, like I said, I'm a total snob, and I am afraid of the day when this little receiver goes out and I can't get another one, because their control pod is what controls everything. Like, that's the sound processing. But just as a quick example, I have been, you know, I've been telling you guys that I've been playing Mankind Divided and not much else. Well, I don't know what they did, but they have messed up the sound. Because I booted it up one day, and I had my speakers turned on, and my center channel was just gone. Like, it's just not there. Like,
yeah.
It works okay when you're in game, but man, when you get into cutscenes and when it's booting up, it is not there. And I can get around it by using an effect on the control pod, but man, it's noticeable. And when you've gotten used to having that, and then it gets taken away, it is not good. So talking about the importance of audio in games, that's what I'm struggling with. Mankind Divided right now, and it's a big deal.
That's fair. I don't have a 5.1 set up right now. I still have those Logitech speakers somewhere, but I haven't set them up. I don't really have a good place to set them up. Where I game at is not in a place that a 5.1 system would work. We don't have one like really set up for like our living room, because our living room's kind of off access off kilter. It's not symmetrical, and so it'd be weird with a 5.1 system in there. So yeah, I don't at this point. Almost everything I do gaming wise, sound wise, is via headphones at this point. Every so often, it's through the really, really crappy speakers in the TV, which is not ideal. But if I'm listening to sound, I'm listening to sound via headphones more often than not.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, and if this dies, that's where I'm going to have to go. But,
sure,
man.
But it is nice to have the spatial response of a surround sound system, for sure. It does make it more immersive and more interesting.
And if anybody knows of a good 5.1 system out there, I'm looking for a replacement because I know this is going to go at any time.
And I've had that for a long time.
I have. I've had it for like 3 computers. And that setup came when this equipment that we're doing the show on came. That's how long ago it was. And I've replaced the control pod once by calling Logitech. They're not going to let me do that again. So, I'm looking for a new setup if anybody knows of a good one. That being said, we got a ton of news. We got to move. We got a lot of stuff
to
talk about.
We've talked about a grand total of one thing so far. So yeah, we'll jump in with Nintendo now. We'll go Nintendo and then Sony, since we got the Google weirdness out of the way, and we'll try to make the last little bit of this show less of a train wreck. We'll see what happens. So, on Nintendo news, the Switch, already less than a year into its life cycle, has outsold the Wii U. It is already past the Wii U, which is both amazing and a testament to really how cool the Switch is as a console, and it is, and also how terrible the Wii U did. It just, I don't think from Nintendo's standpoint in any way can you consider that console a success.
No, absolutely not. Not compared to what they had before it and what they're having after it.
Yeah, and this is kind of what they do. They go through these cycles. The 64 was a big success, though maybe arguably not as big as they wanted or whatever. But then kind of the at least from my perspective, a dip with the GameCube. It was a good console, but underperformed as well. And then they had the Wii, which was massive, and then the Wii U, which was a flop, and now they have the Switch, which is massive again, and God bless them. Good for them. Because I love that Switch. I'm still playing it on a regular basis. And what I'm playing right now on the Switch is like casual games. So I'm still playing Golf Story, which is super fun. And I'm playing, what's it called? The stupid pixel puzzle game where you have to, it's like logic puzzles where you draw pictures out of like codes and on grids. And it's something specific. I don't remember what the name of it is, but it's been a Nintendo thing for a while, and I love it because it's the kind of stupid little puzzler that I enjoy playing and can sit on the couch and watch the Olympics and play a little puzzler, and it's a lot of fun and just passes some time. So God bless you, Nintendo. You're doing well. Speaking of something else I'll be sitting on the couch and passing some time with, Nintendo's officially announced what their next mobile app is going to be, and it's Mario Kart, which seems like a pretty good game to put out on a mobile platform.
There goes your wife. Thank you very much.
Like, that one's good. I really enjoyed Super Mario Run, flaws and all. And apparently there's a big update. I haven't even opened it up. I should do that at some point. There's supposed to be new levels and everything on it. But Mario Kart, driving games are kind of hit or miss, and so I'm a little bit scared of this. Driving games can be hit or miss on mobile devices. But I just feel like Nintendo will probably pull this off, and it's going to be a blast. So it's called Mario Kart Tour. No, like, trailer, gameplay, anything like that at this point. But it's supposed to come out within the next year, by the end of the fiscal year that ends March 2019. And so a year plus from now, we should have Mario Kart on your phone, which, like you said, it's going to own my life.
Like, you might as well just forget it. Like, it's over. If it's any good at all, your life is over.
And what they're almost certainly going to do is some crazy, like, microtransaction thing with it where you have to spend like 99 cents to get a blue shell or something, and that's going to suck. But if they would just sell it for 10 bucks, you got me. Like, you know, like what they did with Mario Run, that like it cost 10 bucks to unlock the thing. I did that in a heartbeat, and I would do the same thing for a Mario Kart game. You'll get my money if you do that. If you do microtransactions, you'll probably make a lot more money, but you're not going to get my money, which... whatever, you probably don't care if you make a lot more money. But I would love to see it just a flat rate. Like the Final Fantasy 15 mobile's 20 bucks or whatever, you know? But it's just, you buy it and you're done, and you got the game. Which, I miss those days when that's how games worked. And those days are probably behind us. Whatever. A couple more Nintendo things for you. First of all, there's a Mario movie coming. which may strike fear into you. But a few details behind it that may give you a little hope. The movie's being done by Illumination, which is the same company that did the Despicable Me and Minions and a couple other things like Sing, which is a movie animated movie that came out recently that I guess was good. I don't know. But I like Despicable Me. Those are funny movies.
Sing was good. So I saw Sing. It was good.
There you go. Yeah. So that's got to go for it. It's going to be animated, which is good. We don't need live action Mario again. There is live action Mario movie out there if you're interested and are young enough not to know that exists. It does, and you should watch it at least once, and then you'll never probably want to watch it ever again, but you should watch it at least once just because it exists. All that being said, Shigeru Miyamoto is also going to be a producer of the project, and that gives me a lot more hope that this might actually be something worth spending some time with.
You know, whatever he wants to do, if he's on it, if he's doing something, they can have my money. Like, yeah. If it's got his name on it, and even if it's just sort of okay, if it's got his name on it, I'll give them my money. Because that guy gets my money.
I agree with that. And that guy has fun, you know? And like, it's the thing I worry most about, like a Mario animated movie, is that it would get focus grouped to death and not really feel like what the video games are or whatever. But with Miyamoto involved with it, like, that just calms that fear for me a lot. Like, I trust that dude, because he, my entire life, has yet to really let me down, you know? Like, Shigeru Miyamoto is making games for as long as I've been alive, and I've been playing his games for basically as long as I've been alive. Since I was 4 or 5 years old, I've been playing games that he's put out. And to this day, I still love him. And so, yeah, if he wants to put out a movie, I'm going to go watch the movie too, and give him all the props in the world for being... Maybe I've never thought about this as I'm talking in my head. Like, there's not many people that have affected my, like, entertainment life, which is a weird thing to say in the first place, but whatever, my entertainment life nearly as much as Shigeru Miyamoto, right? Like, he's as responsible for the games that I play and this hobby that I've had my entire life as any other human being alive. So I owe that dude a lot.
Yeah, we all do. I think we all do.
The least we can do is go watch this movie.
And if all he really is making is $2 million a year, that dude needs more money. Because if a random NBA player that really isn't that good, and I can't think of anybody right now, but if that guy can make $10 million a year, Miyamoto needs more money.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't think he's sad, you know? I think he has, like, just the most joyous life. At least that's what it appears. Maybe he's miserable on the inside, and that would break my heart. But from the outside, it looks like that dude just lives the dream, right? That he's just making video games and having fun.
See? Like, see, that's what I want to do. Like, I'm kind of like, I want that life. I want that life for you and me. And the only thing that provides that as far as I'm aware, you like your job. Your job's great. You like going to work every day, but the only thing that would make me joyous every day is getting to do this every day.
Sure.
So I want to be able to do that. So if I can get there, he's been doing it a lot longer than I have, but if I can get there, I'll take that.
Absolutely. So good for him. Moving from Nintendo to Sony, I didn't anticipate this segue, but it works. Going from Miyamoto to now Kaz, Kaz is stepping down as the CEO of Sony, which is in kind of the gaming industry and in the tech industry on a broader sense, a fairly big deal. But he's also stepping down at a time where Sony is doing really pretty well. Like, the gaming division's doing well, but also their other divisions are doing well. Like, Sony's just in a good place right now, overall, making good money, high profit margin, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm not entirely sure of all the details of why he's decided to step down at this point, but for having in my head forever Ridge Racer at E3, which was Kaz, and then since we've been on Twitter following the parody Kaz Twitter account, which is just phenomenal. And that guy's also retiring his Twitter account. He announced he was retiring the Twitter account before Kaz, the CEO, the real Kaz, announced he was retiring from his position. Those few things have made Kaz a loved person in my life.
And you know what? If you, as a Sony drone or a Microsoft drone, can say something to us that makes you memorable, you're in good shape, and that guy has been. I can't really say that about a lot of the corporate suits that are out there. So that guy did his job.
And as much as we made fun of him for it, It was a moment of, like, this is something he really dug. Even though, like, he's the only person I've ever seen be excited about Ridge Racer, he was legit excited about Ridge Racer. And there's something, as much as we poked fun of him about that, that's still really endearing about that whole episode and moment. And the fact that he's on many times since then poked fun at himself about it as well is endearing. And so it seems like he's leaving at a good time. Again, there may be details behind this that aren't as lovely as it seems, but it seems like a good place right now. And again, Sony seems like they're in a good place just overall. And then, especially on the gaming side, they're still the king of this console cycle, even though suddenly the Switch is the new kind of hot thing. But the PlayStation 4 is so far out ahead on both the Switch and the Xbox One that they're feeling pretty comfortable. So good for Sony. Things kind of looked bad for them not that long ago. The PlayStation 3 era, especially the start of PlayStation 3 era, was really, really rough for Sony. And so they've rebounded well.
Yes, they have. And I think they're going to be around a while. And like we said, like we talked about last show, I really feel like Microsoft's going to have to pick it up because Sony's in a good space right now.
Yeah, and it's industry cyclical. We see that all the time because it was just the last console cycle that Sony was at the bottom, that the Xbox 360 was the best thing on the planet, and that Nintendo was doing crazy things that were successful and then not successful. Now they're back to successful. They haven't been following the cycle quite as evenly. But now it's Sony and Nintendo are the ones that are in really, really good places, and Microsoft seems to be lagging. We'll probably see something at E3 that would go, oh, Microsoft's back, you know, like here they are doing their thing, and then it's going to be a big deal. So, a couple more things on Sony. There is a patent. We always like finding patents because patents are fun. This patent is specifically for a new motion controller for what you would imagine would be PlayStation VR. It looks very similar in a lot of ways from the patent diagrams of the Oculus Touch controller, or the upcoming Vive controller, Knuckles is what it's codenamed, I think, right? We talked about it before, that it has the finger tracking capabilities, and so it can kind of keep up with your hand position. If you extend your hand, it has a little strap that goes around your hand, so you can open your hand and still have control of the controller. It's not going to fall. You're not going to drop it. But it also has analog sticks and buttons and all that good stuff that we like on a game controller, and looks like both a good controller, just in the kind of VR space, but also, I think as importantly, is their continuing dedication to this VR platform. And PlayStation VR, I think, is one of the under-reported successes of the last year or so. That thing has blown up. Like, it's a pretty big deal. Like, in the gaming sphere, like, if you want, like, good VR gaming content, PlayStation VR might be a better place to go at this point than Oculus or Vive. The Oculus and Vive, I think, are still the better overall experience. But just on pure software, like, they have such tight, good software out there for that VR platform. Yeah, it's doing really well.
If you're getting into it right now today, absolutely, PlayStation VR is the place to go. If you buy one, it needs to be PlayStation VR. I say that as people that own a Vive, but I'm saying if you're getting into it today, PlayStation VR is the place to go.
Yeah, and specifically, I'll say if gaming is your primary focus on the VR side of stuff, if you want some of the more experiential things, I think that the Vive world might do it better, or the Oculus world. Although, I'll say this, like, this is, in our Olympic fandom, the Sexy Sidekick and I are watching the Olympics this morning, and they do a quick little tease about VR content for the Olympics. Like, you can go online and get VR content of you know, different sports, of like what it feels like to be in a sled for bobsled or whatever. And I'm like, that's awesome, because I love VR and I love the Olympics. And so, of course, you know, like, I'm going to go put those things together. So I immediately go look it up. And they don't have it on the Vive or Oculus. It's only Windows Mixed Reality, and it's Google Daydream and Samsung Gear VR. But they don't have it on the high-end platforms. And that kind of boggled my mind. Like, we have the best VR platform out there, and the VR content that the Olympics is putting out isn't available on it. I hope that changes. I hope it does end up on the Vive soon. But at this point, it's not, and I really shocked me.
And all I can say is that they don't think anybody has it. Like,
yeah,
that's why. They're like, we could put this out for Oculus or Vive, but nobody really got that, right? So we'll put it out for the Gear VR, which I don't really know if anybody's got a Gear VR, but apparently somebody does.
Apparently, yeah, and same with Google Daydream, but apparently people have them. I'm going to look up really quick what Gear VR sales are, because that's made me curious. 5 million Gear VR headsets as of a year ago? I'm just looking at the very first thing that popped up. Yeah, this is a year ago. 5 million as of last January, so there's way more than that at this point. So, wow, good for them. I suppose, just kind of boggling my mind that many people have a Gear VR. So, yeah. All that being said, I spent too much time on Reddit looking at other people who were complaining about the same thing. And apparently they think it's because of the technical requirements of the Vive or the Oculus that it's just a whole lot easier to put them out on the simpler products, which, by all means, whatever. I was just bummed because I was excited to do some Olympics in VR and still hope to at some point.
And I got to tell you, that I want to see. Like, I don't know what you're going to see. Somebody, like, I don't know if they put you at the top of the bobsled track and you get to ride down with, you know, with some people doing some bobsledding, but I'd do that.
Yeah. It sounds really fun. Like, it sounds like really good content. And so hopefully at some point we'll get to see the content. Speaking of really good content, working on these, but we're getting through some show notes, which is good. Still on Sony, PlayStation Plus games for this month are really good, as they typically are. Sony does a really good job at this. The two PlayStation 4 games are Knack and Rhyme, which are both kind of cartoony, platformery, cool, trendy kind of games that when they came out were kind of made much of, and both are apparently pretty good. Knack's gotten poked fun of here or there, but apparently still a solid game. And so, but that's just continuing a streak of if you're paying for PlayStation Plus, you get really solid free games. My back catalog of PlayStation Plus titles at this point is just absurd of stuff I'm never going to get around to, and so I need to get around to some of them. Knack is one that I've wanted to play, and so hoping I'll get a chance. And then Rhyme looks really cool too. Big, beautiful kind of sweeping vistas and platformer puzzling kind of stuff. And so, at PlayStation Plus, so Nintendo's launching their service later this year. If they do something similar, they're going to get my money too. But PlayStation Plus is just something that's been completely worth it, where Xbox Live, we used to say you just have to have it. The fact that we're not Xbox people in this generation, PlayStation Plus is now what we have to have. It never even crosses my mind that, yep, we pay for that. That's a thing that we need.
Well, and the thing is, and we say it over and over, the reason why it's a thing that we need is they give us software. That's it. They give us software. I pay 50
bucks. Yeah, being able to play online is cool, and I take advantage of that from time to time. But yeah, 90% of it is the software.
And I got to be honest, I think about the fact that I pay 50 bucks a year, and even if I never download another game, that they've given me my money's worth. Okay, yeah. Like, I've got a ton of games that I can pick up and play right now, and I'm paying 50 bucks a year to play those games. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah. And we could say the same thing for the Origin service by EA right now. I haven't picked that thing up in a month, but I don't feel bad about it, because when I do, I'll play a game that I don't own that I paid 50 bucks for, and when it comes back up, I'll probably re-up it.
Yeah, that's entirely fair. I would not argue a second for that, and I haven't either. I need to see if they've put some new titles up. I have Titanfall 2 sitting on my rig, and I haven't even fired it up yet because I have way too many games to play. But, yeah, man, we need more time. How do we make more time in the day?
We need it. No. What we need is a sponsor, so what we can do is this. We need a sponsor because we don't need more time. We got the same 24 hours as everybody else. We just need to spend more time doing this.
That's fair. Totally fair.
So,
good times. One more thing on Sony. God of War, the Dad of War version, has a release date, which is April 20th, which is soon, 2 months away, which is pretty exciting. That's a big deal. And a few more details about it. I missed this detail somewhere along the way. Apparently, it's not going to have a jump button.
Yep. What?
No jump button in God of War, which seems really weird. It also seems very weird that when we finally did get a jump button for Zelda, that they take away the jump button of another game that's kind of plays similarly, this kind of action RPG style things. Oy vey. We'll see what happens there. And of course, it's like they're still going to be jumping. It's just going to be like in Zelda, where it's more kind of cinematic, scripted kind of stuff, and you don't just get to jump with your character like a moron whenever you want, which I get. But I always jump like a moron all the time in games with a jump button. I am my ADD takes over if I have a jump button, and I jump or roll everywhere. You've watched me play Horizon enough at this point, you know that I just randomly roll all
oh,
the time.
Oh man, it's awful. Zelda. It is bad. It is.
Any game I play where, like, you can press the button and the character does something. So maybe it's good that God of War is going to take that feature away and make me not do that anymore. So, but outside of that, another interesting part of God of War is that it's going to have optional boss fights, which I'm not sure how I feel about this, because my first reaction was like, what the crap? I love boss fights in God of War. Like, that's the reason you play God of War, is it has these just great, epic, super cool boss fights. But then I think, well, maybe it's like go back to like our Final Fantasy days, and Final Fantasy VII had these cool, super difficult optional boss fights that you could go fight these big, huge beasts that you didn't have to, but like if you were awesome enough and could fight them, like it was super rewarding and fun. And so maybe it turns into something like that. But as God of War is a game that's built on boss fights, I'm planning to play them all. Right? Like, that's part of the fun of God of War.
I don't really get that. Like, if boss fights are optional, what's left? I mean,
it's not all boss fights.
No, but
some
mean,
of them.
No, but I mean, how many minions can you really kill?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how many hordes and hordes of bad guys can you really kill? You kind of got to have the boss fight.
Sure. It's going to have boss fights. It's just you don't have to encounter all the bosses. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I imagine it'll play. I don't know. I don't know what this game's going to play like. This is kind of a crapshoot of a game for me at this point, right? Like, I love God of War, but I'm thinking in my head of whenever Prince of Persia put out a Prince of Persia game late into the life of Prince of Persia, and they just called it Prince of Persia, and it kind of sucked. If you fell off, you didn't die, it just popped you right back to where you were before, and it just, like, part of Prince of Persia all before that was it's this big platforming game that, like, you have to be really careful not to fall off, and now you don't really, because it just puts you right back where you were, and so it gives you no motivation to be good at the game. So I'm a little worried that God of War may be going that route, which would be a little sad.
It would be more than a little sad that you know, we just spent 20 minutes praising Sony. If that happens, we'll spend 20 minutes going, what the crap?
Yeah, for sure. And probably a lot more time than that, honestly, because God of War is a big, big deal. We'll be really sad if it sucks. But I would say there's more than a, like, 10% chance that this game isn't very good. And I would also say in the same breath, there's more than a 10% chance that this is the best game that they put out in the franchise. Like, I just don't know. It's really weird. The good news is it's only a couple months away, so we'll find out soon.
I can't wait.
Me neither. It'll be a fun one with all this back catalog of games we need to play. So, speaking of games we can't wait for, Red Dead, we officially have a release date for now after rumors and leaks and whatever. We're to October. So this one's a little farther away, but that's okay. October 26th is the official release date of Red Dead 2, which is great. And it's also exciting because we're going to see a lot of that at E3, I'm sure. And also a bunch of leaks, some more confirmed than others, about some of the gameplay elements, including what looks to be a battle royale type gameplay mode. So think of like PUBG, but in Red Dead World, which could actually be really cool if I'm careful enough to say that.
Well, here's the thing.
Be really fun.
That might be really hard with a six shooter.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah, I suck at PUBG.
I can't really... that would be hard to do with old-fashioned guns. I mean, to really be successful, you'd have to be the guy walking around with a Gatling gun all the time. You know, just spun up just all the time.
Yeah. So. But everybody else has the same weaponry, so at least it hopefully makes it somewhat even. So... But that sounds really cool. Like, I could see at least trying that out of wanting to do a little bit of a battle royale mode with Red Dead. Apparently, there'll also be a first-person mode, which is interesting. And so we'll see how that goes. They did patch that into GTA 5, and so it seems like a realistic thing. There's a lot of stuff at this point floating about online, knowing the success that Rockstar's had with GTA 5 online. We'll talk about that in just a second. I imagine there's probably going to be a really, really deep online element to it. And with we talked about before, Cabbage brought up originally, with the success of like Westworld, like it seems like it could be a world that you want to get lost in and really go explore. It could be the video game Westworld kind of equivalent there of just getting caught up in this world. And I, for one, am super pumped about that. This game, the closer it gets to coming out, the more and more excited I'm getting for it. And I was already pretty pumped.
I mean, for crying out loud, it's Red Dead. That's all you got to say. It's Red Dead. Yeah. Like and Westworld adds to it, and all this Western craze adds to it. Like, there's a Christian Bale Western out there now, and so Western is kind of the thing. But, like, if none of that existed, it would still be Red Dead, and we'd still be pumped.
Absolutely. 100%.
So, like, we should be excited.
Yeah. And are. And will be. And hopefully we see tons of it at E3. Like I said, Grand Theft Auto 5, little bit of news on it. This is just mind-boggling to me. Grand Theft Auto V has officially passed the 90 million copies sold mark. 90 million copies of Grand Theft Auto V out there. In part due to the success of Grand Theft Auto Online, for sure. That is definitely a big part of it. And just that Grand Theft Auto games are always a big deal. But in doing a little research, that puts Grand Theft Auto V as the third highest selling game of all time, behind Tetris, which is number one, and Minecraft, which is number two, which still just boggles my mind. But yeah, every kid I know plays Minecraft, and so I guess that makes sense. And then Grand Theft Auto. This was, I did a little research just to see comparatively to some other games. Grand Theft Auto 5 at 90 million copies is just slightly higher in the total number of all Zelda franchise titles games sold. The latest statistics I could find on every single Zelda game that's come out put it at 89 million units. Grand Theft Auto 5 alone is at 90 million.
That's look, here's the thing. All right? We just talked about Miyamoto. That's why that guy shouldn't have to do anything but what he's doing. That's why. Because that guy did that. And oh yeah, did we mention he did Mario also? Like,
sure.
That guy did that. Like, he lives an amazing life because he earned it. And that really puts some stuff in perspective. Like, we talk about these numbers, and you could have said 90. What was 90 million?
Yeah.
You could have said that, and we would have gone, wow, it's amazing. And then you put it in perspective, and it's like, holy crap, Miyamoto, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's nuts. Couple other things we'll wrap up. BioWare has officially announced, I don't think to anybody's surprise, that Anthem, one of the big debuts of E3 last year, won't be coming out until 2019. Again, I say to the shock of probably nobody. It was supposed to originally come out this year. Doesn't look like it's going to. I think we can probably assume the same with The Last of Us 2, which still hasn't been given an official release date that I know of. But I think Anthem and The Last of Us 2 are probably going to be the really big titles of 2019 at this point.
And I'm okay with that. Like, Anthem I have no clue about, but we know The Last of Us 2 is going to be great. And
take all the time you need to make it great.
Like, if Anthem is all right, then I'm good with that, because I know The Last of Us 2 is going to be great.
Yep. 100%. One more game is coming out this year, in fact, in less than 2 months from now. Far Cry 5, which the release date on is March 27th. Which I think we mentioned on the last show. Maybe I don't remember if we got to that or not. But now we know March 27th, the release date for Far Cry 5. On top of that, we also know about the season pass / the add-ons, which is a thing that Far Cry does and other games do as well now. But if you remember back to Far Cry 3, there was the what was it called? The crazy like neon 80s themed battle. I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was super cool. The add-on that was a kind of standalone mini title that was psychedelic and crazy and super cool, just really, really well done. This time they're doing three of those kind of add-on titles. There's a zombies one, which I don't think is probably surprising to anybody. There's one that's apparently set in Vietnam, which is interesting, and I'll be interested to see. And then there's one that's set on Mars, which also sounds fascinating and interesting. And it's supposed to be all three of them are kind of like B-movie-ish kind of knockoffs of just kind of ridiculousness around the Far Cry universe. And so I would imagine you pick up Far Cry 5, and the storyline on Far Cry 5 is probably going to be pretty serious and deep and all that kind of stuff. These other things I would imagine is where it gets into the more kind of silly, goofy, over-the-top stuff that they've done before, which is cool.
And
Blood Dragon. That's what it's called, isn't it? Sorry.
Holy crap! You brought up all that crazy stuff. Can we just stop and go on a tangent for a minute and just say Elon Musk sending a Tesla to Mars? I love that dude.
Isn't that the truth?
I love that dude. Can we get that dude on this show?
He needs to start making video games.
Have I said on the air that one of the things on my bucket list, because I do have a bucket list, and funnily enough, a lot of the things, most of the things on my bucket list include you, which is very interesting. But one
I appreciate
of,
that.
One of my things on my bucket list is to meet Elon Musk and get him to build me a Tesla in the shape of a van that I can wheel the chair in. Like, I want a handicap accessible Tesla. Can I get that, Elon? Thank you.
That would be phenomenal. That's a thing in Dallas. Like, there are Teslas everywhere here. Every day I see a Tesla, it just blows my mind. Because, like, I still think it's a super cool car. Like, I drool over every one of them. That's, like, my dream car. Like, I want a Tesla so bad because it's just so geeky. But they're just everywhere. And they have now, like, they have, like, a crossover-sized Tesla that take a couple of seats out of there, put a lift on it. Bam, there you go.
You know, that's not bad. I might be able to pull that off. I really do want one. I want one that I can fit a chair in. And so, Mr. Musk,
that'd be phenomenal.
Can we make that happen? Because they're like 300 miles on a charge, and I'm tired of paying for gas.
Yes. 100%. That'd be great. I love that dude. That dude he sent a car into space, and it's fantastic.
And
then launched landed the freaking rocket boosters back on Earth. That's also pretty fantastic.
Like, I wish, and I haven't really said much about this on the air, but I'm kind of feeling inadequate as a person at 38 years old because I think of myself as pretty smart. I think you're pretty smart. But we know we're on the level of that dude. Like,
right.
That dude has been real smart since the age of zero. And I just like hearing stories about that with him. It just makes me feel totally inadequate as a person, like I've wasted my life.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel the same way? Because I do.
Yeah, like, definitely, which is a bummer, but also makes me think that dude's awesome. Because that dude's awesome, and he, like, talk about how I would take Miyamoto's life of, like, just, like, childish joy and playing video games. I would also think I would take, like, Elon Musk's life of, like, ruling the world, right? Like, that dude's going to be in charge of all of us at some point. Like, he's going to create the AI that's going to take over the world or whatever.
Hey, I'd vote for that guy.
You're right.
I would. I'd vote for that guy.
Me too. Yeah, for sure. So, I love Tesla. I think it's great.
Which, by the way, we've been on the mic for two shows. Sorry to cut in.
Nope, you're
good. But I don't think that you know, other than a text here and there. But I got a new freaking chair.
Right? How's that going?
You know what? It's a lot to get used to.
I bet
it's a lot to get used to because I got all of these functions to like raise myself up and lean myself back, and I'm frustrated because I've done the entire show upright and I've just now realized it. Like, I don't know why I did that, but I should have myself cranked back. And now that I have these abilities to like manipulate myself, it feels like my body was like, yeah, I can go to crap now because you've got all these different options. Because I'll sit in a chair for like 6 hours and my butt will start to hurt, so I have to adjust. And then my back will start to hurt, so I have to adjust again. And like there is definitely a Patreon video in there somewhere, but I'm putting it off for when you are in the building. I have not done it because that's the Patreon video that needs to go on when you are in the building. Cause,
yes.
Like, for crying out loud, dude, I got headlights. Like, seriously, I got headlights and turn signals. So
that's fantastic.
Talking about Mr. Musk, I want that dude to take my chair and modify it. Because it ain't perfect. So I would like for that dude to take my chair and modify it. So I will say, saying all of that, dude, you got to come down here because we got to do that video before the new wears off. What?
That's fair.
If you could, like, come down here for, like, a day and a half on the weekend, that'd be great because I think we're going to have a little fun with this.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
I really do. I mean, for crying out loud, man, headlights.
That's fantastic.
I'm excited to see it. Freaking life for that. I got headlights.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped to see the new chair. That'll be a good time. So
yes.
By the way, go by the show notes, gaminghouse.com. I'll mention two other stories really quick. David Brevik, who is one of the creators of Diablo, is making a new game that is called It Lurks Below. That is like a 2D side-scrolling dungeon crawler that's like pixel art and looks super cool. And so, pumped about that. And then, I have to throw this one in here because it's the story that fascinated me the most of anything that's happened in the past few weeks. Billy Mitchell, who you may know from the documentary King of Kong, which we talked about early on in the history of this show, who was the champion Donkey Kong player who went back and forth with several other people for high scores for a long time, is now in this big controversy in the like arcade high score world for one of his more recent high scores on Donkey Kong being achieved on a MAME platform as opposed to an actual Donkey Kong arcade hardware. And so using emulation, playing the game, but without all the kind of precautions and checks that go into if somebody wants to try to set a record using software emulation, raising the specter that he possibly could have cheated and taking some of his best scores off of the records list. It's the most absurd, like, geeky video game world, like, point scandal I've ever heard of, and I think it's awesome.
Here's my question. Has that guy made money for being that guy?
You would think. Surely he's figured out a way to make some cash off of that.
Because if he hasn't, why is everybody bitching? Like, if he's just doing this for fun and he hasn't made any money, shut up!
But I mean, like, that's any kind of competitive stuff. Like, people always will take it seriously. I mean, there's money involved, obviously, in that he made this documentary and goes around and does speeches and that kind of stuff, I'm sure. I don't know that there's a bunch of prize money in Donkey Kong scores, but I bet there's some. You know, I bet they have competitions and that kind of stuff. And so it's just crazy. Like, no matter what it is that is competitive, there's always going to be controversy in that. And there's also always going to be the crazy level of nuanced whatever that, like, you don't ever know about exists behind the scenes. And sure enough, there it is. And, like, there's always that craziness. So I don't know. I love the story. It's so ridiculously over the top in the gaming world. I think it's awesome.
It, like, I wish that's all we had to worry about. Like, I wish that was the thing that we had to worry about. Like, that's what I feel like would be so good about doing this show full time. It's because we could turn all the other crap off and do 20 minutes about how some dude's Donkey Kong stores might be fake. Like, that's what I want to do with life. That's a good way to live right there. That's good stuff.
It's pretty amazing. So anyway, go by to the show notes, gamingthesensor.com, or on the Twitter feed at podcastgu. All the show notes are there as well now. To see stuff we didn't get to, because there are a few interesting stories we didn't get to as well, including some hands-on impressions, of Nintendo Labo. You can see a video with a guy making some Nintendo Labo toys, gadgets, things, whatever you want to call them, and then playing with some of the creations as well, which is pretty cool. So check that out, gamingonsensor.com.
And all I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, is he did a ton of work to make this show happen, so I don't do it very often, but everybody needs to stand up and give Tommy a round of applause, because I think most people would have just said, I quit.
It wasn't the best, and it turned into a bit of a train wreck, especially there at the beginning, but hey, we got through it. Here we are. So, good news. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Well, I try. You know, we've been doing one further away. Holy cow. We almost got through the entire show and missed it. We had an anniversary 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And
think about it. But you're absolutely right.
I think we are, this is year
13?
13, that we're done with. Think.
Yeah. So we started in 2005. It's 2018. So
February 7th, 2005, first show. Yeah. 13 freaking years.
That's nuts.
We gotta make some money, or I'm not ever gonna. I'm not ever gonna be able to justify how I've spent so many hours of my life. Like, seriously, we gotta make some. We gotta get some sponsors or something. Because my dad's looking at me at this point going, how many hours have you spent on that show? And he's kind of right, to be honest with you. I'm having a blast.
I just did the math really
too.
Quick. Do you want to hear the math?
Yes.
The math is terrifying.
Yes.
It's essentially a month of our lives at this point. A steady, complete month that we've been talking on a podcast.
Well, you know what's funny about that? Is my dream right now in life is to have nothing to do but this show for a solid month.
Right.
Okay. So
that's fair.
So I'm okay with that. That's why I'm begging for sponsors. That's why I'm trying to find money. Because that's what we need to do, is this show for a solid month. Can you imagine doing a show every day for a month?
Yeah, that would be insane.
That would be insane, but I think we could do it. I think we could pull it off.
Definitely could.
So that's what I'm looking for, ladies and gentlemen. We've been on the air in the last 13 years. We've been on the air a month. Now I want to get paid to do it for at least a month. Okay? Yeah. That's where we're going. Thank you for spending a month of your life with me, sir.
Absolutely.
I think it's
Let's do another one.
Yeah, that's a freaking lovely. Holy cow. Can you imagine it being 26 years later?
Yeah.
And we're
I'll
still
see why
on
it won't
there.
Be.
I keep thinking it. So, boy, your wife is going to stop us, and she never has.
Me too. Nope. So, at this point, just keep on trucking.
Do you think it's because she thinks we're insane and there's no point in even saying anything?
I think that might be fair. Yeah, like, I think that might play into it.
Like, because I can't imagine why somebody would support this for quite as long as she has. But she has, and so we got to give her credit. Because
absolutely.
You can't give her that math, because if you do, there will be a massive eye roll.
Yeah. Like fall over level eye roll. So yeah, I definitely won't. But I've enjoyed every second of our month of showtime together so far. It's been a good time.
And I want more, just like you said. So if you're enjoying the show and you can think of ways to support us, please do so. We've got the Patreon. We've got the PayPal. We've got the Facebook. We've got the Twitter. We've got all of that stuff. It doesn't have to be monetary. Come hang out with us. Come spend time with us. We're having a blast. We hope you are too. You can send us email gaminguncensored@gmail.com or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210. By the way, I almost forgot. I usually do this right after a segment, I forgot to do it, so we'll do it now. Patreon guys, we owe you guys a shout out. So Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spiderwise, Spencer, Kavash, and Chad. Thank you guys as always. We appreciate your support. We paid for web hosting this month, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Thank you guys for helping us do what we do. We have been an independent podcast for 13 years with a sponsor here or there. I listen to podcasts all the time. Every day I'm listening to podcasts. I just hear all these podcasts that are like Blue Apron and Casper Mattresses and all that stuff that have these big, you know, like corporate sponsors behind them. And I'm like, we've been doing this thing for a long time based on the support of people who listen to the show. And that's awesome. And so thank you guys a ton for helping us continue to do this. And we're looking forward to doing it for a long time.
Which, holy cow, this is like the first year that we've actually had money to pay for an entire year of web hosting. And I'm so thankful that you didn't scoff at me when I was like, dude, can we get web hosting paid for?
No, that's exactly what we got this for. Yeah. Paid our bills, man.
Yeah, because I gotta tell you, this thing gets expensive. Like I'm looking at the gear that we're working on right now, and I hate to say it, but sooner rather than later, we're gonna have to do massive upgrades.
Yep, absolutely.
Like yeah, we so. Are. So
yeah, it's nice to have support that allows us to do that. So again, thank you guys a ton. Your support means the world to us. And if you aren't supporting and would like to support us, you can do that. Go to gaminguncensored.com and click on the Patreon link right there at the top of the page. It'll take you to all the details, and you can do that as well. By the way, there is some new content up on the website. We didn't even talk about what we're playing on the show, which we usually do in the train wreck of the open of the show. I'm playing This Is the Police right now, and so I'm planning to do a write-up on that as soon as I get finished with it, which will hopefully be pretty soon, which is cool. So I won't talk about it now to tease the fact that I'll put out some web content that'll go out to Patreon guys first and then to the general web public soon about This Is the Police, which is a really fascinating game you can go get on Steam.
And I just put up some content from Mankind Divided. There will be very more. Nice. I hope it went live. Did it go live? On Patreon. It is not live on the website yet, but it should be live on Patreon. There is more coming, so I'm back to actually getting stuff done, I hope. And like I said, we thank you guys so much for putting up with us, because we had a long drought there.
Yes.
But that's what happened. Life gets in the way. We really appreciate it. Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
But right now, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and for one more week, we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.